This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hulu. Based on shocking true events, the new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, tells the story of a savage murder in a small town. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. Michele Andeggio-Cello has made a career as a bassist, multi-instrumentalist, and vocalist. He's been performing professionally for over 30 years and is responsible for hits like If That's Your Boyfriend, He Wasn't Last Night, and the John Mellencamp duet Wild Night. As you brush your shoes, you stand before your mirror. Andeggio-Cello has recorded albums spanning folk, rap, rock, blues, you name it. Just a few weeks ago, she earned a Grammy for Best Alternative Jazz Album. The Omnichord Real Book isn't exactly jazz, though. It's sort of genreless. It touches on neo-soul, funk, afrobeat, hip-hop, and experimental music. It is also unmistakably 100% Michele Andeggio-Cello. When I talked to Michele in 2009, she'd recently released her seventh album, The World Has Made Me the Man of My Dreams. Here's a song from it, Lovely Lovely. Michele, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. So you were born in Germany, right? Because your dad was in the service.
Yeah.
When did you move to D.C.?
Oh, not until I was about, I guess, like 10, 11, but the formative years.
Were you between places before?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We moved around quite a bit, but I'm definitely a southern person. I live mostly in Hampton, Virginia, Alexandria, Virginia, Richmond, Virginia. Then we came to D.C., Maryland area. So I feel that's my home.
When did you start playing music?
About 14, I got the bug. My brother played the guitar. My father plays music as well. Instruments were always around in the house. So it was a good outlet. It was something I could do alone or with my brother. So I enjoyed, you know, picking up an instrument and trying to express myself.
The United States has such a national culture that's very odd for there to be really unique regional art forms. One of them is, you know, I mean, there's club music in Baltimore and
right.
There's go-go in D.C.
Yes.
Did you have go-go in mind when you started playing the bass?
No, well, it was the first gig I ever got. I was playing in a go-go band. It's just a natural part of my nurturing. But you're right, that music can... And so far has only existed there. So it's a very, provincial experience.
Well, with the possible exception of doing the butt.
Yeah, that's about it. but I don't know if that's going to be a classic. I'll see about 20 years from now. Let's see what happens.
See if people are still doing the butt?
Yeah, I doubt it. But yeah, but it's definitely influenced my playing. And plus I liked hip-hop, so I liked the... The go-go was more of you were trying to really be an MC and get the crowd involved in a different way than it was, you know, spewing out your thoughts. So I like the combination of both.
Did you ever aspire to be an MC?
Oh, yeah, I think so. When I was young, I was like, I loved Just Ice and KRS-One and Milk and MC Light. And it's sure, there's something in me that thought I could. But now I find that genre to so commercialized, it's hard to find stuff that I can really connect with. But more so, I'm a bassist and a songwriter. I think that's what I've grown into or developed into.
When you were really young and still living in DC and you first started gigging, was it weird? Were people surprised that there was a teenage girl playing with the go-go band?
Definitely, I'd get that. But I tried to maintain something that my brother and other friends tried to instill in me, which was don't be good because, you know, don't get them to say you're good for a girl. Just get them to say, wow, you know, you're good no matter, you know, what you are. So that was my main focus. But I would just, you know, ignore the haters and, you know, just try to do my thing.
One of the amazing things about DC Go-Go's is it's this world that is completely self-contained. So you can really be in a band and be a real working musician, mm-hmm. playing lots of gigs,
yes.
And never go more than, you know, 45 miles outside of Washington, D.C. What was it that led you to step outside of that world?
Socially, it was very limiting. You're like a big fish in a small pond, and I'd rather be the little fish in a amazing world and see different things. I was inspired to travel. I went to New York and I think in 1995 and it just blew my mind. I don't know, my thoughts were bigger. I had the first Prince record and I said to myself, I just want to make records. I want to make records and travel around and play. I didn't really like school too much. Didn't really fit in with what was going on there. I'm like, I liked Go-Go, but I also liked Rush. And, you know, so I just needed to get out and make new friends and try some different things.
Sometimes when you're a bass player, maybe it just comes with an instrument. Yeah. You get a Rush CD that just glued to the back of the bass.
Exactly.
Comes like, with free Rush CD.
Yeah, see, I liked stuff like that and PIL. And I like a wide range of music as a kid. And I just, yeah.
We have so much more to get into. Stay with us. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR. This message comes from Apple Card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase. That's 3% on products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card, issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy. This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive, and it's Name Your Price tool. Say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show coverage options within your budget. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The NPR app cuts through the noise, bringing you local, national, and global coverage. No paywalls, no profits, no nonsense. Download it in your app store today.
This is Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is the Grammy-winning bassist and singer Michelle Indegeocello.
Being a bass player is a really particular thing. We had Raphael Siddiq in here a couple of weeks ago and talked to him. He's another great bass player. How do you think the fact that the bass was the instrument that you picked up has changed your musical path?
Yeah, the bass player is the foundation. It's the only person that can move around on stage, kind of see what's going on. we're the root of the chord. We're also rhythmical. It just made me a more solid musician. And as a singer, it's nice to be able to know the foundation of the music. I am a big fan of bass players.
So when I listen to your records, I'm very aware that you're a bass player because the bass is really the center of your work. I mean, even to some extent on like Bitter or something, which is a much much softer and more guitar oriented record. What do you think are the opportunities that you have, you know, musically and also sort of texturally as a bass player when you're making records? What is it that you can do that somebody else might miss?
I'm always thinking of the colors, not the line I played or how fast or is it funky or groovy or anything. I'm just thinking about the tone, how the bass hits you coming out your speaker and out of your headphones. I think I pay attention to details like that of just how it sounds and feels coming at you. And I listen, as a bass player, I just feel it gives me the ear. I listen to everything. I have to listen to harmony and the drums. I am the center of it all. I keep those two things together. Plus, I feel like the bass player is the humble band member. Like when you play the guitar, you're the singer. Singer, you want to be up front and you have to have a sort of a command. The bass player is just okay with like sitting in the groove, sitting in the cut, not causing too much trouble. You know, I'm definitely not the hype man in the band. I'm just the gentle one, keeps it all together.
Can you think of a song on this most recent record that had a really particular color that you were shooting for?
Oh yeah, definitely. Article 3 is the one that is like, I guess to me it was, I wanted to be like just a sonic barrage, a rhythmical and sonic barrage on the ears. Fat yet edgy. that's what I was trying to get.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is musician Michelle Ndegeocello. Shortly after high school, you got pregnant and had a child.
Yeah.
How did that change the? That's a very difficult place to be in when you have this idea of being free and traveling around. How did it change the trajectory of your life?
I just took him with me. I think the thing about, yeah, I struggle with this topic. I mean, having a child when you're young is very difficult, but at the same time, I think my naivete allowed me to go, I can make it whatever experience I want. So I had great friends and family when I couldn't be there all the time to be with him, but I would just take him with me. He's been on the road quite a bit. I'm sure his memoirs will be different. We'll have a different view. But it just changed me because it wasn't all about me. And I knew I had to be able to take care of myself and another person. But I love children. I love seeing the world through their eyes and watching them because everything's so fresh and new. And you forget that by the time you're 12, you start trying to have your own self. But I enjoyed it. I love children. It was hard at times. I'm sure people say, well, in hindsight, do you think you'd do it differently? And I really don't. I'm grateful for the experience. I loved it. You know?
When did you start performing performing under your own name, performing as a solo artist?
1920, I got to New York. I joined the BRC, the Black Rock Coalition. Got some gigs, had some ideas. I would write songs a lot. I was always interested in recording. Once I realized college and getting out of high school wasn't going to be really my strong point, I went to a engineering facility that, you know, gave you a certificate. You learned to be an engineer,
you went to an engineering facility like to get robotic arms.
I went to I studied with Bob Yesbeck, this amazing engineer. He mixed Christopher Cross records, stuff like that. And I went and learned some skills. And once I could record my own music, that was it for me. I created my own little world and did my own thing.
When you signed your first record contract, do you feel like you had a sense of who you were and who you wanted to be?
Oh, not at all. And I know I just turned 40. I thought I'd never be one of those people that would be like, I look back then and I knew what I wanted. But no, I still don't. You never do. I just feel like I'm on this ride, and I take it as it comes. Some things are disappointing, and some things are great. But you're never done developing, I guess, as a person or a human being. You know, I can only look back and say I was really excited. I could have done things differently. Had a better lawyer, been a little bit more savvy about some issues. But the experience was great. It's got me here, you know. All I knew is I wanted to play. That's all I knew. And I knew I had these ideas. I love, the only thing I miss about youth is the sort of that this inner feeling of you can do anything. And that's the only thing I think I felt. I was like, I can do anything. Just let's go record. Let's go do something. I've always been just focused on the music.
We'll have more with Michelle Ndegeocello after a quick break. When we return, we'll talk about the time that Michelle shared the bill with Blackalicious and Ozo Motley, and how I, a young, hairful Jesse Thorne, was in the audience. Stay with us. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This message is brought to you by NPR sponsor Progressive Insurance. You call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. Tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options within your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
My name's Doug Duguay, and I'm here to talk about my podcast in the middle of the one you're listening to. It's called Valley Heat, and it's about my neighborhood, the Burbank Rancho Equestrian District, the center of the world when it comes to foosball, frisbee golf, and high-speed freeway roller skating. And there's been a Jaguar parked outside on my curb for 10 months. I have no idea who owns it. I have a feeling it's related to the drug drop that was happening in my garbage can a little over a year ago. And if this has been a boring commercial, imagine 45 minutes of it. Okay, Valley Heat, it's on every month on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts. Check it out, but honestly, skip it.
These are the chronicles of the Rancho Equestrian District in Burbank, California. California. These are the events taking place in my house, around my house.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. We're listening back to my conversation from 2009 with bassist and songwriter Michelle Ndegeocello. She just won a Grammy for her album, The Omnichord Real Book. On her second album, Peace Beyond Passion, Ndegeocello recorded a song about a gay man who is harassed, beaten, and ostracized from his family. She titled it Leviticus, colon, then a derogatory slur used for gay men. I asked her about the song.
Yeah, just singing about what I knew about. Before there was Matthew Shepard, I had a friend of mine who didn't survive a beating and being bashed. And so it was just something that hit me. And plus in my life, learning about who I was and people judge you and never really get to know you. I just wanted to just tell my story. So there was no sympathy.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you've been for some time out as bisexual.
Yeah. I'm just a human being looking for love.
Did the way that your identity was affecting your life change between when you made that first record and when you made that second record and moved on and you moved forward in your career? Did it feel different to you? Were you struggling with different issues?
Oh, yeah, just in your personal life, just the judgment. The first record was, I guess, saw more as R&B. And at that time, R&B was seen as, quote unquote, black music. I hate these generalizations. But people of color tend to be the most homophobic. and so it was difficult to hear some of the things I would get from people in interviews or being out while I played. Plus, the only thing I have learned from that, and especially looking at society now, the things that we deem as entertainment, is these reality show personal life things. You're looking into somebody. And only thing I come away with is privacy, especially in your interpersonal relationships. Because I realized no one was listening to the fact that I could play the bass or write songs. That became the focal point of everything. And so, I mean, by the third record, I became bored with it. And it was hard that that was all anyone would ever focus on.
The third record was called Bitter and was pretty much universally hailed as being spectacular. It's also very, very different from the first two.
Well, hopefully the music hits people with, like, this could be you. I'm just trying to create something that other people can have an experience and a feeling with. You push me away.
Play a show in Santa Cruz when I was in college, and this would, I guess, be 6 years ago, something like mm-hmm. that. And it was you and Black Star, Mos Def and Talib Kweli, right. And Ozo Motley.
Yeah, yeah.
It was one of the most surreal concert experiences I've ever had because, as I recall, maybe you were the feature act. I think you might have been the middle act in that right. show. It was Santa Cruz, so there's all these hippies there to see Ozo Motley. And there's all these, you know, kids literally with backpacks at the time. And it wasn't just a metaphor backpack rap at the time. People would wear their backpack to a show, there to see Black Star. And when you stepped onto the stage, all these kind of butch ladies pushed their way up to the front, right? And it was really something because it was these three, you, Black Star, and Ozo Motley, aesthetically are not too far apart from each other.
Okay.
But you...
I love Ozo Motley.
I think by virtue of the fact that you've been so long performing as an out bisexual, you have this very particular audience, and certainly not the totality of your audience. I wonder if you feel in any way like responsible to that audience or feel like it's in any way, like if you feel like having that particular audience as opposed to just, you know, the hippies who go see Ozo Motley or whatever.
I don't know. Yeah, I kind of suck at that, actually. I was
in what way?
Yeah, at the giving, you know, I guess I don't, I'm just a musician. I'm just a singer-songwriter. I'm just a human being. And I guess, again, I struggle with that, like, generalizations. Because I guess last night I played the House of Blues, and there are people expecting me to be just like Plantation Lullabies or just like Bitter, like that same person or personality that they've perceived. But all I can do is be myself. I'm like a 40-year-old human being. I just have other things to offer now. And there's no way you could get the whole scope of me in a 70-minute show. So do I have a responsibility? I think my first responsibility is to the music and playing and having quality, being a quality musician and singing the best I can. And all I can hope for, inshallah, is that the people get a good feeling from it too. I think I'm not trying to go to Vegas later on in life and like rehash the past. That's not my goal.
I would have guessed. Yeah.
At 50, I hope, like, you know, I play with, you know, maybe I can get some gigs with Neil Young or something, or play with some electronica band from London and just hang in the back. You don't have to see me. I'm just, you know, I'm hoping for other things, you know, just trying to do other, be as open and curious as possible.
You've played with many, many different artists in many genres as a session player, and you've worked with many artists as a producer and et cetera, et cetera. You made a jazz record a couple of years ago. What are the new horizons that you're exploring now at 40? What's interesting to you?
Well, sometimes playing the piano and having a tape recorder and recording the sounds that are just out in the world naturally. What interests me now? I really like movies. I'm like scoring. I want to score something interesting, probably something abstract. I like to make some abstract scores for abstract cinema, things that were just propelled by visuals, not necessarily a linear storyline. I think I would have more interest in that.
Well, Michelle, we'll stay tuned.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here.
No problem. All Thank right? you so much.
Okay.
Michelle Ndegeocello, her Grammy-winning album, The Omnicord Real Book, is available to buy or stream everywhere. Here's another song from that record. It's called Virgo.
They're calling me back to the stars. La la, deep outer space.
It really rips. I can't recommend it enough. And in fact, I will add to that that she has posted some videos of her and her band playing the songs from the album in studio on her YouTube page. And they are so cool. I mean, the virtuosity in the band is so extraordinary, and the way that it is bounded by the tightness and funkiness of those songs. And man, their restraint as well. It's a beautiful thing to watch in addition to listen to. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California, where each and every one of us are finding out if there are any holes in our roofs, because boy, has it been raining. Our show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Our producers are Jesus Ambrosio and Richard Roby. Our production fellow at Maximum Fun is Daniel Huesillas. We get booking help from Merritt Davis. Our interstitial music is by DJ W, also known as Dan Wally. Our theme song is called Huddle Formation. It was written and recorded by the Go Team. Thanks to the Go Team, thanks to their label Memphis Industries. Bullseye is on Instagram at Bullseye with Jesse Thorne, so follow us there. You can also find us on Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
Traveling way too far, too often, taking myself away, envisioning days in the celeste, milky moon.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the NPR Wine Club. NPR Wine Club members have contributed over $1.5 million to helping create a more informed public. B21. Join the charge at nprwineclub.org/podcast. This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/NPR.
The Indicator from Planet Money is all in on video games. Not just because they're a fun hobby. Video games are one of the fastest growing businesses worldwide, worth more than the film and music industries combined.
We're seeing some games that are really taking, $500 million to make.
We're taking a week-long look at the video game industry. Listen to the Indicator from Planet Money podcast on NPR.